You can check the reports of researchers like Bud Hopkins or the late Dr. John Mack and the many other serious scientists who are working with people who have had these kinds of experiences. Mostly they're troubled, and the therapist has to get to the memories through hypnotherapy and such. With me, I remember most of what happens to me when I get taken. And I'm putting that down here, in my words, right now. Moreover, these creatures, these visitors, if you want to call them that, as Whitley Strieber does, have allowed me to keep my memories for a very particular purpose. It's the 21st century, and we're in a crisis. Whether you're talking nuclear meltdowns, political emergencies, global warming, environmental catastrophe, religious awakenings, consciousness risings or paradigm shifts, we're in the midst of vast changes. Like I say, I'm just a regular guy, but for some reason I've got something that these visitors could use to teach me a lot of amazing things that just might help humanity get through these changes. Here, then, is what these aliens are telling me. Here, now, is my story. Chapter 1, Abducted by the Mafia. Fort Myers Beach, a beautiful town on the Gulf Coast of Florida, is where I grew up. It's also the place I fled to when my life seemed to be unraveling in Texas and North Carolina. I have family here. There's nothing like family to steady a soul. At first my family wasn't sure how to take all of this. They seemed quite certain I'd lost it. Over time they came to support me. The Gulf of Mexico is a gorgeous sea. Its waters are warm and mostly calm. Every large body of water has its own scent and I love the smell of home. The nights are mostly clear and filled with stars. When I see a sunset of gold and orange, I relax. Even when these strange creatures come and take me elsewhere, I know they will bring me back here to this community, where I only have to walk a short way to run into an acquaintance, or even better, a friend. Fort Myers Beach will always be small because it's an island, just 15 miles off the mainland from metropolitan Fort Myers. It is close enough to enjoy Fort Myers's historic areas, yet far enough to be a great vacation spot. If you want sand, beaches, sun, and surf, we've got it here. When I was a boy, Fort Myers Beach was just a fishing village filled with natural charm. Today, it's a tourist mecca, although it still has a fishing fleet that gives it a lingering, 16, the keeper's charm. There's nothing like sitting near this beach eating fresh Gulf shrimp, stone claws and oysters, along with a tangy iced tea with lemons that were just hanging from trees earlier in the morning. Even as I sit here now writing of aliens and the future, I can smell the marvelous aromas of smoking fish from the smokehouse on San Carlos Boulevard. It has been around a long time, since Fort Myers has always been a fishing port. The fishing boats bring in a bountiful haul of grouper, snapper, tuna and bonita every day, and some of it goes to the smokehouse where wood and fire do their magic. I never get tired of this place, even though lots of tourists have found it, especially, alas, college students on spring break. It makes me feel good. The Gulf radiates peaceful energy for me. There are playful dolphins here and brightly plumed tropical birds. The sunset is spectacularly beautiful every day. Afterward, the stars are bright. It's pretty astonishing to think that one of the scariest and the most unusual contacts started right here on a beautiful, moon-swept Fort Myers Beach night. March 7, 1994, is probably the most significant date in my story. The aliens had taken me away many times before, but I want to tell you about this day first because of what happened that night. In that fateful winter of 1993 to 1994, I'd just gotten back together with my wife Teresa after tumultuous times. The calming effect of Fort Myers Beach worked on me, and I was getting my act together after a lot of insanity. We had a beach house, a nice one with ample rooms. Although my marriage had improved, I still slept alone. I'm a restless sleeper, and I guess Teresa didn't really mind being relieved of that part of me. On that evening of March 7th, instead of sleeping on the living room sofa as I usually did when I slept alone, I decided to use one of the extra bedrooms in the back of the house. We were two, abducted by the Mafia, about 100 yards or so from the Gulf with a few outer houses between the surf and us. With the help of a pleasant night with Teresa, I went to bed around midnight and fell into a deep sleep without dreams. At 3:47 a.m. the hand gently shook my foot, and I woke up. I could hear the waves lapping on the beach, and a breeze played through the trees outside. The room smelled like a troubled memory. Teresa? I said. Enough moonlight crept through the window for me to discern a dark shape at the end of the bed. I was afraid. Just because this wasn't the first time something like this happened, it wasn't exactly old hat either. Fear is fear, and fear is what I feel whenever this thing happens. Yank my chain, push my buttons, what's in me comes out. What comes out when I know I'm about to get on the abduction special is stone cold fear. A pale light rose up in the room. At first I thought it was just a man. He wore a jacket with wide shoulders and baggy pants, a black dress shirt, and a black silk tie, up tight against this neck. His suit was an Armani or some other fancy designer cut. A wide-brimmed fedora hat slouched low across his features. Those features, I came to see, were not human, but rather they were the strangely shaped head and arm and eyes I'd come to know too well. I guess the cat's out of the bag as far as what these creatures look like. X-Files did an okay job in depicting them. In the flesh, the aliens have a definite look, a presence, an otherworldliness about them, and the human instinct in their presence is to be very afraid. This time was different. Where the eyes of my abductors before had been indifferent, this guy's eyes seemed cruel. 3. The keepers here before me was an alien dressed like some 1930s style Chicago mobster. Those words rattled in my baffled brain, and I repeated them out loud in confusion. He said, "The boss wants to see ya." I wish I could say I wasn't still afraid. It's not often that an alien abduction starts out with a comedic slant, though, and the idea of being in some intergalactic farce was not as nuts as it might sound and is a hell of a lot easier to swallow than most of what I've been through. Why did the alien that night come dressed like Humphrey Bogart in Angels with Dirty Faces? Do these visitors actually have some warped sense of humor? Putting aside the Men in Black, one doesn't find a lot of slapstick comedy in the alien stories we hear. I was not familiar with the UFO movies or literature then. I was mostly just stunned, and only a little less freaked. Now I wonder whether the aliens sometimes use our own cultural icons to communicate with us. As you'll see, they may well have time travel capacities, and this Joker's last touchdown may have been the late 30s in America. Then again, perhaps these things are just so alien, just so off the map of what a human can grasp that my mind sometimes short circuits and substitutes impressions as ludicrous as a gangster masquerade to allow these experiences to be assimilated. It's hard to believe that there's a sense of alien humor in these guys, but then maybe they're slapping their knees behind our backs right now. "Despite the outfit," I said, "you're scaring me." Those alien lips weren't moving. But it hit me then that the movie mobster's voice was sounding in the middle of my brain. I don't read science fiction or psychic powers books, and I never knew of telepathy until I started actually experiencing it. Abducted by the mafia, the being's face changed, morphing from a ruddy scowl to a more human, softer look. Then I realized what was happening. This was what I have come to know as screen imaging, kind of like virtual reality, only without visible computers. The visitor was playing with my perception of visual reality. Maybe that's where it had found the dusty costume trunk to play Halloween with, from all the old movies in my head. "Everything will be all right. You'll be fine," he said in a friendly manner. "Why are you wearing that old style suit?" "Why a suit at all?" I managed to say. The transition was instantaneous. One moment I was in my warm bed. Next, I stood in the backyard, with the Gulf breeze on my bare back. I felt the being's hand on my arm. At this point, you might think that I would have panicked. There was nothing at all dreamy about it. It was exhilarating, exciting, and surreal. Before, in these situations, I had always been paralyzed. This time, I wasn't, though I noticed I had very little peripheral vision and my reaction time was slowed, but I could walk and move around. I turned to him and said, "Where are we going?" He said, "You'll be just fine. Just come with me." As he held my right arm, We started walking in the direction of the beach. We walked slowly through my neighbor's backyard, his hand guiding me, not forcing me. We walked across the street, and I remember feeling upset because he didn't even look to see whether there were cars coming, he just charged ahead. We headed down to the footpath that leads to the beach. I remember sea oats along the path. This seemed odd, since I hadn't noticed sea oats along that path before. Sea oats are common scruffy plants that grow here and there in patches along the beach. In this heightened state, however, I finally noticed what I'd ignored all along. 5, 4, the keepers. I could feel the breeze, but I wasn't cold. The smell of the beach, that fresh, fishy scent, was vibrant and alive, and the night seemed incredibly awake. The sand was cool beneath my feet as we walked towards the breakers. We just kept on walking. "We're not stopping," I said. "You're going to walk us right into the water. We'll drown." Again he said, "You'll be just fine." Just at the water's edge, the cold foam touched my bare feet, and we stopped. The night was clear. The stars hung in the sky with an incredible splendor. I had a sense of expectancy, as though we were waiting for something. Then about 15 feet straight in front of us, from out of nowhere, a small circle of dim white light appeared, floating about 10 feet above the water. There wasn't really anything impressive about the white light, believe it or not. Somehow it looked perfectly ordinary as a sailboat leaving a light hanging from its side so other boats can see it at night. The visitor's grip on my arm was not strong, and I could have run away. But, as in previous abductions where I had no chance to escape, I was going along voluntarily. Was I curious? I don't know. I just know I wasn't frightened anymore. I was enjoying this new experience, just standing there with him on the beach. In a sense, I had come a long way. Perhaps this time I could have escaped, almost as if the choice were mine. How out of character this abduction was, because at that particular moment we were on human terms, two intelligent life forms standing on the shoreline. As we stood, I couldn't help but think how many trillions of miles these beings may travel to get here, and how many dimensions they span. Yet, here we were on the beach. All of a sudden, there was a blinding flash of white light. The small circle of light turned into a huge rectangle of white. 6, abducted by the Mafia, figure 1, man in black leading Jim to the spacecraft, light about 25 feet wide and 15 feet high. It appeared to be a doorway made of light. At first I thought this opening appeared from nowhere, or that they had ripped a hole in another dimension, as I know they have the technology to do so. However, in this case the ship 7, the keepers, was cloaked or invisible. The small white light was a marker. The larger rectangle opening was emanating light from inside the ship. At this point this light was much brighter than the light that normally illuminates the inside of the ship. With my lack of peripheral vision, I hadn't noticed anyone else with us. But now another alien of the kind I'd seen before, I call them workers, stepped in front of me. He was smaller than the guy beside me, short, skinny, with a big head and eyes. Then he jumped into the light and disappeared. "Go ahead," said the alien in the suit. "Step into it." I hesitated. "You'll be all right," he said reassuringly. "Just step into it." I did. Pain flashed up my leg. I'd stubbed my right foot's big toe. That was all. So banal, and yet it reinforced the reality of all this. "You have to step up," he said. I thought sarcastically, "Why didn't you mention that before?" I stepped up, and I walked into that huge, overwhelming light. I blacked out and awoke in a dimly lit room. Standing in front of me were three aliens. Two were small worker types, and one was taller, a true alien, as I call them, kind of like a supervisor. Beside them was something akin to a hospital gurney or examination table. After 6.5 years of abductions, this was the first time I was in complete control of my motor functions. Again, I could have run, but I didn't. They seemed to understand me. They seemed to know that I wasn't going to give them any trouble this time, that somehow, for some reason I now knew they wouldn't hurt me. I heard the supervisor's voice in my head. "Would you please lie on this table?" 8, abducted by the Mafia, Figure 2, doorway of light opens. After years of forced procedures, this guy was actually asking me? Sure, I thought, why not? I crawled up on the table and once more lost consciousness. When I opened my eyes, I had no sense of how much time had passed, and no memory of what had happened on the table. 9. The keepers. I pushed myself up and scooted to the edge of the table. 10 feet before me, two aliens at another table asked me to come to it. I was floored. Asking me? Again? Had these guys suddenly gotten social skills? You have to understand the intense feelings of terror and helplessness I'd had before. Now I felt as though they considered me almost a significant person. They had some sense of respect. Still, that overwhelming sense of strangeness kicked in, and I felt those familiar old feelings again. Have you ever wakened from a deep sleep, or after sleepwalking and found yourself in a strange place, and not known who you are? Contemplate this, and then add alien beings, and you might get an idea of the feelings I'm talking about. I'm sorry. I'm afraid this time, I said. I suppose it was too much to ask that they be warm and friendly with great big smiles. Instead, with that screen reality talent of theirs, they reached into my head, and suddenly that cold and gleaming metal examination table became green and felt. It looked like a Las Vegas dicing table. Were we going to play craps? Abruptly, my fear drained. Of course, they knew that I enjoyed a little gambling in Vegas from time to time. They had mucked around in my head enough. I wasn't exactly laughing, but I hopped off and went up to them. Well, they'd designed the table wrong. Bad odds on this felt. Abruptly, this realization twisted something in my head. Blink. The Vegas exam table was just a normal alien examination table again, if such a thing can ever really be considered normal. Still, they seemed to be trying to be considerate. They weren't forcing me. I got up on the table, lay down, and blacked out again. When I came to, I was alone. It seemed quite strange to be alone like this. Always before there had been aliens in these rooms. Not only that, but I also 10, abducted by the Mafia, had complete physical and mental control of myself. I sat up and looked around the plain, gray room and wondered what I was going to do next. The doorway was open, and it led into a hall. The lighting was dim and ambient, not from any fixtures, but seeming to leak from the walls, ceiling and floors. Should I just sit and wait? I stewed about that for a few moments, but boredom and curiosity got the best of me. The hell with it, I said out loud, I'm going to walk around. This felt wonderfully daring, as though I were challenging their authority. I got off the table and held onto it, as though it were some life buoy in a strange sea. I peered out and down the hall, not able to see much. Okay. Take a deep breath, I thought. Here goes nothing. I pushed off and ventured into the narrow hallway. It went about 25 feet down, then made a sharp left. I took the turn and walked a few more feet, coming to an open doorway. I stopped for a moment, debating with myself. Should I just go back and park myself on that examination table and be a good little abductee? No. I had to find out more. I had to find out the truth. Why had they abducted humans all these years? Why was I selected? I had the power now, and I was going to use it. I walked into that room in that alien ship, and the moment I saw what was there, something deeper than fear gripped me. It was a kind of overwhelming panic. There, before me, was the future. 11, dream. It's just a dream. She's strong-willed and vital, qualities very attractive to me. In 1985 we married and purchased our first home. For years I have always been a hard worker, putting in 10 or 12 hours a day, 6 to 7 days a week. After 12 years of working for someone else, I took all my savings and started my own natural land development company, J&J Properties. I would buy land and divide it into home site lots. My main development was called Ashley Estates. When buyers bought home sites, the deed allowed them to clear enough space to build a home, but forbade the cutting of more trees than necessary. Although I lived in Texas, I did most of my business in North Carolina. This work kept me away from home 7 to 10 days a month. I would go to a town and live in a hotel that had a restaurant and bar. I would eat at the hotel restaurant and have a cocktail in the evenings. After several weeks, the natives considered me a local. All this time I would keep my ears open and do research. I would find out where the building growth was heading. Afterwards, I would buy raw land a few miles ahead of the growth, then I would harvest pine straw while waiting for the growth to come to me. When it did, I would divide and sell. At the time, Teresa managed a large apartment complex in Houston, and was quite content with her work. We had everything we needed, it seemed. We were young, happy, healthy, and successful. In mid-1988, though, my abductions began, and everything changed. It started with a dream. I would have the same dream over and over again for a period of weeks. When I woke up in the morning after each dream, I was paralyzed. I was completely conscious but unable to move. After a few moments, I gradually gained mobility. Sometimes I didn't have the dream and I'd wake up and be able. 13, Chapter 2, Dream. It's just a dream. Prior to 1988, you could never have convinced me that alien abductions were anything other than strange psychological fantasies. Prior to 1988, I considered myself an average American in pursuit of the American dream. I wanted success, a happy family, and whatever fulfillment an average life had to offer. Let me tell you a little more about who I was before 1988, then I'll talk about the year that everything changed. I was raised in South Florida, born to a couple named Sam and Rose, an old-fashioned hard-working Italian-American couple. I worked odd-end jobs throughout all of my schooling. After graduating from high school, I took 2 years of college, mostly taking courses related to real estate and investing. I then went to work for a major condominium firm. In 1978, the firm transferred me to Houston, Texas. In 1984, I met Teresa, a slender, blonde woman. She was pretty and down-to-earth, my kind of person. Teresa is the youngest of 11 siblings in a poverty-stricken family. She was raised in North Carolina and was forced to pick tobacco instead of going to school. She left home at 15 and began to work full-time. At the same time, she got her high school diploma and took a 5-year college Bible course. She literally taught herself how to read and write. 12. The keepers to hop out of bed, feeling fine, no problems. But whenever I had that terrible dream, I couldn't move when I awakened. This was the dream. I feel something beside my bed. I am pulled up by strange entities and guided out of my bedroom, down the hallway, and into the guest room of our house on the ground floor. It had a large double-paned window with blue drapes and white minna blinds. I walk to this window, then walk right through it, without stopping. My escort and I go across the front lawn, over the street and into the woods adjacent to the house. In our front lawn we had honeysuckle bushes. I don't think there's anything sweeter than the smell of honeysuckle. In my dream, I could smell that honeysuckle quite vividly. When in bloom, the tiny flowers that had fallen to the grass would stick to my feet. I remember looking down and seeing the blossoms on my feet just as I entered the woods. I have no memory of what happened in those woods during those dreams. However, I always emerge out of that blankness and cross the street again, walking through that solid window into my home. Down the hallways I march and end up back in bed. Upon waking, I would have vague, incomplete memories of my dreams and would be unable to move for a while. These dreams occurred from May until early December of 1988, maybe 2 or 3 times a week. For whole stretches of time they didn't happen. Even when I had them, I just shrugged them off and went about my daily schedule. Dreams fade quickly under the light of the sun. The one aspect that did bother me was the temporary paralysis. That was so odd, I would think about it from time to time. Still, I never mentioned it to anyone. Then, in early December, things shifted. I had my dream and woke up unable to move. But this time the paralysis lasted longer than usual. When I was finally able to move, I walked down the hallway and looked into the guest room. 14, Dream. It's just a dream. Honeysuckle flowers were strewn across the carpet. They clung to imprints in the pile carpeting. The heel of one imprint was in the yard and the toes were on the carpet. I thought, how could this be? I remembered what I thought had been my dream. But this was cold hard reality staring me in the face. Figure 3, footprints through the wall. I panicked and phoned the police. When two officers arrived, I regretted the call, but I showed them the evidence that someone had come into the house, and walked right through a window and wall. There was right footprint on the lawn outside, and a left footprint on the pile carpeting. Also, there was that footprint, half on the grass and half on the carpet. 15. The keepers, was a crime committed? One of the policemen asked. No, I guess not. They went away and probably had a good laugh back in the squad car. If I had a history of strangeness in my life, I might have taken this all in stride. But the truth was that I'd never had a paranormal experience before in my entire life. Surely this kind of thing just didn't happen to a businessman. As I got out the vacuum cleaner from the laundry room and vacuumed the carpet, making sure to remove every flower, twig or blade of grass, I thought how relieved I was that Teresa was out of the house. I wouldn't tell her, not yet. I couldn't hide this from myself. I was consumed with questions about what had happened. I wanted to talk to Teresa. I was pretty rattled, and I started flubbing up on my job. But I also didn't want to scare my wife, and I certainly didn't want to give her cause to think I was crazy. No, it was best to just wait and make sure myself. I would wait for it to happen again. Also, I decided that the next time I had one of those weird dreams, I would make an effort to remember more detail. About a week later, the same dream came to me again, and I sensed a presence at my bedside. Teresa lay beside me, sleeping soundly, and I can remember thinking in my semi-conscious state, "Dream. It's just a dream." My resolution to remember kicked in. I was going to try to see who was doing this. Focus, I thought. Pay attention. Who, or what, was this presence? In the dimness, I was able to make out that these beings were shorter than the average human. Then the familiar dream unrolled. Being pulled from the bed, walking down the hall, the shock of passing through the window and wall into the lawn, crossing the street and going into the woods beyond. Then the aroma of honeysuckle. 16. Dream. It's just a dream. Next morning, as soon as I experienced the familiar paralysis, I headed straight for the guest room. Sure enough, there were the footprints in the carpet, and the honeysuckle flowers. While I had gained a valuable piece of information about these events, why was I being carried from my house by short creatures? Strange and upsetting as all this was, though, it was nothing compared to the events that came next. With all my strength and will, I thought, if this bizarre experience happens to me again, I will be present and conscious. I will remember. I showed Teresa the honeysuckle, told her about the incident and my feelings. She insisted I was playing some kind of strange joke. People in the bedroom. I would have heard them, she said. Don't be silly. So the next few times it happened, I just vacuumed up the honeysuckle, leaves and grass, and kept mum. So far, I wasn't getting anywhere in remembering what went on in the woods. I felt frustrated, and my work suffered. Still, I was determined to stay conscious during these strange occurrences. Finally, after many more dreams, I was successful. In late December of 1988, I was having a difficult time sleeping. Finally, after much tossing and turning, I nodded off. I woke up to see the digital clock read 3:30 a.m. I drifted back to sleep, but then, quite suddenly, I woke up. I couldn't open my eyes or move my body. I heard a low-pitched whirling sound, which slowly got louder. A strange sensation grew from the pit of my stomach, creeping up my torso towards my heart. When this sensation filled my chest, my heart began to race, and louder and faster came that whirling sound. Deep instinctual fear overwhelmed me, but I couldn't even open my mouth to scream. Cold sweat covered me as I screamed silently. My heart was thumping so fast I thought it was going to 17. The keepers jump out of my chest. My head filled with that sound. Whirling, whirling. Until the whole universe was that sound, and it wanted to burst open my head. Then I felt a tremendous rushing feeling. I was accelerating as if I were going down the steepest grade of a roller coaster, without any kind of safety harness. I don't want to die. I screamed inside myself. I don't want to die.